Welcome to The Wildlife, a program that probes the mysteries of the animal world through interviews with scientists and other wildlife investigators. I'm your host, Laurel Nemi. Today on The Wildlife, I'll be joined by John Roberts, director of the Golden Triangle Asian Elephant Foundation and also director of elephants for Anantara Golden Triangle Resorts and Four Seasons Tented Camp. We'll talk about the life of domestic Asian elephants in Thailand and the innovative approach being taken by a relatively new elephant camp at Anantara Luxury Resort in northern Thailand that aims both to help these animals and to help their owners improve their way of life. But first, let me play you today's creature call. This week's creature call is an endangered mammal that is the largest living land animal in Asia. Now listen carefully and see if you can guess today's creature call. At the end of the show, I'll play these sounds again, tell you what kind of animal made them, and also give you a preview of next week's creature call. Now, let me turn to my conversation with John Roberts about domestic Asian elephants in Thailand. Asian elephants differ from African elephants in that they have smaller ears, a flatter forehead, and the top of the head is the highest point of the animal. Also, while both males and female African elephants have ivory tusks, for Asian elephants, only the males do. The Asian elephant has played a key role in the history and culture of Thailand. They've been domesticated for ages, and at the turn of the century in 1900, there were about 100,000 domestic elephants in the country. They've served in a variety of ways, as transportation for cargo and people, to battle tanks, road builders, and religious symbols. They've been vitally important in the logging industry, and many say they're the best tools for sustainable logging because they can help fell a single tree without destroying the ones around it. In 1989, logging was banned in Thailand, and the industry was put out of action. That meant that the elephant keepers, called mahouts, had to find other work. Typically, they either worked their animals illegally and brutally in the forest, or else they went begging for money in the city, where the noise and pollution are distressing to the animals. Today we'll talk with John Roberts about one interesting alternative for the elephants and their mahouts. Born in rural Devon, John set about following a typical English career path. Too serious in school, not serious enough in college, he scraped into a materials science and engineering degree at Bath University. Fairly early on, it became clear that noble and important as materials scientists are, John's future was not going to involve sitting in a basement breaking things. Nevertheless, he finished what he started and came away with a not-too-bad degree and a need to escape what he considered an overcrowded island. Growing up in a rural atmosphere had engendered an interest in the natural world, and so contacts were borrowed and a volunteer placement in the Guadalupe Mountains National Park in the desert of West Texas was secured. A year was spent there fighting fires, making trails, and enjoying the stars. His next move was to the even more remote parts of northern Australia, where he spent a year lighting fires, driving trails, and enjoying the peace and quiet. A knowledge of fire as a habitat management tool and a proven ability to live in the jungle without going too mad landed John a month-long volunteer placement at Tiger Top's Jungle Lodge in Chitwan National Park in Nepal, where he stayed for 5 years. Helping with the International Trust for Nature Conservation's tiger research and other projects, guiding elephant and Land Rover safaris, doing more and more hotel-based work, and being granted over 50 tiger sightings. By a couple of fluke meetings, John heard of a new elephant camp being set up in a luxury resort in the north of Thailand. The owners apparently were looking to not only make sure that the elephants were well looked after, but they also were looking for some elephant-sensitive activities that set them apart from other camps in Thailand, as well as do some conservation work for the Thai herd in general. The email John sent pointing out that about the only thing his previous experience had prepared him for was this must have landed on the right desk on the right day after the right number of coffees. The owners took a risk on a foreign elephant camp manager and the rest is history. John is a trustee of the English registered charity, the International Trust for Nature Conservation, and acts as director of the Thai registered Golden Triangle Asian Elephant Foundation. He has also contributed articles to publications as diverse as Bird Conservation Nepal and Land Rover Monthly. He's also director of elephants for the elephant camps at Anantara and Four Seasons Tented Camp, which have gained worldwide television and press coverage and together with the foundation provide more than 30 elephants, their mahouts, and their families with a living. When we talked recently, I asked John, who spoke to me from northern Thailand, to tell me about the Golden Triangle Asian Elephant Foundation. Specifically, I asked him what it is and why it's needed.
It's a charity that we set up having been operating an elephant camp for a few years here in the Golden Triangle. We started off working elephant camp, which we still operate. But as time went on, we realized we could do more. And specifically, Thai elephants have a problem, or Thai mahouts have a problem, in that there's very little work for them to do, especially baby elephants that can't work in tourism or anything like that. They find themselves out on the streets, basically with their mahouts, but begging for food as a way for the mahout to be able to make a living for himself and his elephant and his family. And we set up the foundation to try and give them an alternative to that.
For people who don't know, where exactly is the Golden Triangle, and why is it called the Golden Triangle?
The Golden Triangle is in the far north of Thailand, where the three countries of Thailand, Burma, and Laos meet. It's right on the banks of the Mekong, or we're on the banks of the Ruak, so our border is actually Burma. And it's called the Golden Triangle because of its past in definitely the opium growing time of its past. It's got a long history of opium and a long history of lawlessness, and apparently gold was the only currency that was allowed up here.
Oh, really?
And yeah, everything. Nothing else was trusted.
And now, are there a lot of elephants there? Because Asian elephants are a rare species and a protected species. So it's interesting to hear more about that they're used for domestic purposes. So tell me a little bit more about domestic elephants in Thailand.
Okay, we deal only with domestic elephants. We would love to one day help wild elephants, but there are none in this area. Elephants have been domesticated in Thailand for thousands of years, as they have throughout the range states. In the old days, they were used for things, pretty much anything a diesel engine would be used for now. They were used for their strength, not so much in the way of stamina, but they traditional jobs involved transportation, particularly of heavy loads. They would involve logging in the forests to try and take down trees. Elephants remain the only thing around here that can remove one tree from a forest without destroying any other trees. They were used for warfare and basically any heavy lifting jobs, and they had been for centuries. But nowadays, two things really put them in the position they're in now. One is the advent of the diesel engine, which is far more efficient. Elephants get tired very easily.
Oh, do they?
Yes. Well, they can do. It depends. You've got to be very careful how you work them if you're going to work them. And a diesel engine, of course, doesn't. You can keep it running 24 hours a day with two operators. And the main thing that got them was the ban on logging, which came along in Thailand in 1989 when they realized the trees were disappearing and would disappear very soon if it wasn't stopped. And so they banned logging, and that was the elephant's major form of income at that point. So all of the traditional owners, all the people who owned elephants, suddenly found themselves out of a job. And those that, for one reason or another, wanted to continue having elephants found that they had to find other ways to make a living, because elephants cost a lot to feed, and obviously everybody has to make a living.
What happened to the elephants that found themselves out of a job?
A fair number of them, I think, were let go. A few of them, again, a fair number. No one really knows. Quite a few went across to continue illegally across into Burma and into Laos to continue logging and do it there, but of course that was illegal because they were Thai elephants, but logging over there was still legal. The others found themselves going into tourism as being the only thing really that they could do, and they continued to, and illegal logging a little bit in Thailand as well, and tourism I think must have started off slow and grew, but it's still, there still isn't enough room for all the elephants in Thailand to be working in tourism, so eventually they found, I think possibly they went. The history of how I think elephants wound up on the streets comes very much from Buddhism and the fact that the elephants are so revered, which sounds counterintuitive. Yeah. So excuse me, there's machine gun fire. Just a second.
Okay.
Sorry, it wasn't machine gun fire.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask, why machine gun fire where you are?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Just anything could happen. No, it wasn't anyway. But they, in order to try and make a living, having suddenly found themselves out of work, a lot of mahouts would take the elephants into towns or walking home. And as you walk through a town, the natural reaction of Thai folks is just to come out and feed the elephant. And that people will, as a way of making merit, bring them bananas or sugarcane, just a little offering for the elephant as it walks past. And we still see that now. If we take an elephant through the town to take it anywhere, if you walk through, people will come rushing out to feed it. And I think from that, the reflex in local folks was probably the start of people realizing that, well, they could make some money, enough money to look after their elephants if they took them onto the streets and did it as a profession. And it started, and they started doing that with adult elephants, and quickly realized that if you had a baby elephant, not only did you have an elephant that couldn't work elsewhere, so therefore was a drain on your resources one way or the other, you also made a lot more money by offering people bananas in return for money, and the people would then buy the bananas off you and feed it back to your elephant. And that's pretty much the situation as we have it today, working mainly in tourist areas because that's where the money is. The street elephants tend to wander the areas of Bangkok where the tourists are, and they will sell you sugarcane and bananas, and you will feed that to the elephant, and they will pocket the cash. And that's pretty much how a lot of the elephant people make a living nowadays, and this is what we try and offer an alternative to.
And traditionally, elephants were used in all these different forms of work, but traditionally, you had said that they're very revered. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
I'm not sure that all of them were even reared, but it was traditionally the way that men and elephants worked together for forever, I guess. In fact, I think in the old days, people didn't want baby elephants. They weren't reared that way. People would be taking elephants out of the wild at sort of 15, 16 years old, and then taming them. Because in those days, a baby elephant was not, there was no need to have baby elephants. Lots of breeding wasn't going on. So there was no tradition of having elephants with the families and growing up with them. The work, I don't know, it was going on, and it happened in India, in Burma, still happens in Burma quite a lot, still happens in Laos, and the elephants were the heavy lifter. And there are villages still, again, in Burma and Laos, where they're working. I've only seen them in Laos, where every other household will have an elephant and they go off, and it's specific villages seem to have looking after elephants and working with elephants as their history, as their way of life. Certainly the guys we work with from Surin in northeast Thailand, it's almost their, well, they have, the people who look after elephants have their own separate language. It's their cultural identity to have elephants, which is why they find themselves in the position they're in now. It's something their fathers did, their grandfathers did, their great grandfathers did. Their language and their traditional culture is based around having elephants. And they don't see it as having a choice as to whether to continue owning elephants or not. They still do, but they got to try and find a living for themselves and their elephants
And
in one way or the other.
then do they pass it on to their children, both pass the elephants on, and do they breed the elephants now or no?
Yes, now there's more breeding going on because babies are worth something, because they can go out onto the streets, which is not ideal, but it happens. The problem is if you have a working elephant and she gets pregnant, for the last 3 months of pregnancy she can't work, and then she has an infant at her heels for the next 2 years. So basically, if you have a working elephant and she gets pregnant, she's off work for two years. And a lot of places are only pay you piecemeal. They only pay you if you work.
And how long is a pregnancy?
18 to 22 months.
You had said so you're trying to provide an alternative to that lifestyle on the street. So what is the alternative? Tell me.
We see it. We will bring them up here. We pay them a healthy rent, not as much as they can make on the streets, but there's a change of lifestyle. They say that they can make 7,000 baht a night down there, which is quite a lot of money. We can't possibly afford that. But we give them housing, food for the fodder for their elephants, insurance for their elephants, And we allow the family to come up as well, so they can all be together and have a decent quality of life for the humans. And then the elephants themselves, particularly the babies, come and live in our grounds and hang around and be babies and just be elephants. So there's no, for the babies anyway, there's no work for them to do.
And then for the adult elephants?
The adult elephants, we have a hotel, the ones that work with us, we have a Mahout training course. So basically what we do is we invite hotel guests to come in, and because we're based on a five-star hotel here, we invite hotel guests to come in and we give them a taste of what it's like to be a Mahout. So they come and collect the elephants in the morning with their real Mahouts. They take them for a bath in the river. They basically look after the elephant for the day, and we teach them a few of the riding commands.
And do people ride the elephants as well?
Yes, yes. So we teach them how to ride on the neck as a Mahout would. We also offer the traps in the basket thing, but that's not our main thing. It's just something that we do, and some people don't want to get hands on, but most people want to get hands on and do it that way.
And we've been talking about Mahouts, and what exactly is a Mahout? A person who owns an elephant, or is there more than that?
Well, I guess that's the loosest definition. Mahout's actually an Indian word. In Thai, it's Kwantan. But we use the Indian word because that was the one that turned up in all the literature, so people understand that from outside. But yes, the loosest definition is someone who has an elephant, who rides an elephant. For most of these guys, almost by definition, because we're not paying them as much as they could earn on the streets, but we're giving them a quality of life, it's someone who's grown up in the tradition of owning elephants, who has a deep understanding of his elephant. It's a 24-hour-a-day job. If the elephant needs something at night, they'll go and look after that elephant. Just even if it's out in the forest, they'll find it and deal with it. Hopefully here, what we try and encourage is to have someone who really spends 24 hours a day looking after the elephant and caring for the elephant, who's part of that elephant's life and has the elephant as part of his life. Particularly with the guys we work with from the northeast of Thailand, from Surin, the elephant is part of the family, and I guess they call themselves Mahouts if an elephant is part of your family.
So what is a typical day for the elephant? I mean, here for domestic animals, you know, we have cows and sheep and chickens and dogs and cats. So how do elephants fit into the family, and what's a typical day like?
For us, basically, the elephants are out in the forest land or in the grassland at night. So the Mahout will go and collect his elephant at 7 in the morning. For the elephants that people learn to ride, they then have a bath in the river. Actually, they all go for a bath in the river now, but in the colder season, the babies don't have to go in until later. The elephant will then... The guest will ride the elephant back into camp on the neck. We will spend an hour and a bit teaching the guest a little bit about the commands. If they do a 3-day course, we teach them some veterinary training as well, and a few other things about the lifestyle. Then from there may be various light duties up until about 11:30. There's 2 hours off. Everybody has a rest, for the most part, actually, nowadays, because guest numbers are low, they'll have 4 hours off. And then in the afternoon, from 1:30 to 3:30, the guests will come back down. We'll go for a walk in the jungle with the elephant, take them for a longer bath with the babies, and then the elephant goes back out to the forest at night, and the day's over. So basically, it's, what, from 7 till 3:30? And the elephant gets into a bit of a routine, so it's quite nice. The babies just don't do anything. They hang around in the jungle. We do have a few exercise routines and everything else for them to make sure they're getting enough exercise. And we have times when they're actually off the chains and running around and playing, and try and make that as much as possible. So, but babies just hang out and have fun, I hope. Well, fight amongst themselves most of the time.
And I was going to ask if they're in a cage or an enclosure, or how you keep them in the jungle, and they just hang out there because they know they're being fed.
30-yard chains, so they can interact with each other, they can play and eat. but they can't stray. Well, they have to think about it before they stray too far. They can always break the chains if they need to.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's in the old days when the forests were endless and when borders meant nothing, then the people just used to let them go. But unfortunately now, if an elephant crosses the river, then they're in Burma, and we've done it on a couple of occasions. It's very difficult to get them back, not for the elephant's sake, but for the paperwork's sake and everything else. And if they cross our road, they wind up in a farmer's field somewhere. So we have them on long chains so they can interact and be together, but have to think twice before they go anywhere. And that's during the night. During the day, we give them as much freedom as we can because the mahout sits and follows them and watches them.
And then how are they controlled? I understand that the mahouts can control their elephants with a series of physical and verbal commands.
In the logging days, they'd have about 70 commands, and an elephant's capable of learning that many commands. We teach 5 or 6 different commands. But for the most part, the mahout and elephants have been working together long enough that the commands, when the mahouts give them, sound nothing like the official commands anyway. And there's also the physical commands behind the leg or behind the ears, with the feet behind the ears. I'm doing it's not very good for the radio, I'm doing an impression for you at the moment. Feet behind the ears and then tapping them on the back and everything like that.
And how do you train an elephant?
There are various ways. What we try and do is, and it's one of the things we do try and do, is work on best practice. I mean, in the old days, particularly when they were catching wild elephants, but even with domestic elephants, traditionally, I would say it was a violent and brutal affair, and we try and move away from that. There are guys down in the guys who work with the Chao Goi, the Soi people, who are traditional elephant keepers. Their methods tend to be nicer because mother and baby grow up as part of the family. We've got one guy who trains by tickling and singing. Now, not all of our guys can do it quite as well as that, but we try and get them to learn from him. And so nowadays, it's a question of whilst the baby's still with the mum, the training starts a little bit with a few things, getting it to sort of make a reaction before it gets a banana, and just basically through positive reinforcement to try and get them used to the idea of following commands. And then from there, they will, because the mahout and the baby stay together the whole time, even while the baby's still with the mum, they gradually pick up more and more commands to go on. And it seems to work. So there doesn't seem to, well, if you have the luxury of time, which of course we do, there doesn't seem to be any need for all the brutal stuff. But it's a question of ensuring everybody who needs to train an elephant everywhere throughout the range state has the luxury of time, and that's one of the things that we have to prove it works here first. And once we've proven it works, then hopefully people will relax a little bit and not try and train their elephants too quickly and too brutally.
Oh, that's interesting. So you're really sort of a model for training as well.
Well, that's what we aim to be. I mean, none of it. We aim to set out to be a model in the first place of a way that we could show that elephants and mahouts could work together and make a living in a jungle environment that wasn't just the basic trekking camp, and that you could charge, because what we do with our guests, we charge a fair amount. We have a separate foundation which looks after the babies, but for the activities, we charge a fair amount. And we set out deliberately to do that because we felt that it would buy us the luxury of time to do these things, so the elephant only has to work for 1 or 2 hours a day, or 3 or 4 hours a day maximum, but for the trekking or whatever, only 1 or 2 hours a day, whereas you'll find in places where they don't charge a lot for what they do, just to break even, the elephant has to work 10 hours a night, or 10 hours a day. So we set out to be a model of a way to show that you could be a business and run it as a business, but still be soft and good to your elephants. And we started out that way, and gradually as things have gone on, and we started with training, and we first of all rescued some mother and baby pairs from the streets, and then we've had a couple of elephants born here now. Mothers were pregnant when they came off the streets. And then, so hopefully, yes, we try and be on the cutting edge of gentle training as well. But practical training, we also see it as important, or I see it as important, to have elephants that are controllable, that the vets can get near, that you can treat, that aren't going to go on and be dangerous to other elephants and other people. Because, of course, in an ideal world, this group for animal welfare, in an ideal world, we wouldn't necessarily train any of the elephants anyway. They'd just be running wild, and you wouldn't need to train the elephants. But in the situation we're in now, that these elephants are domestic, they're always going to be domestic. We do see that they do need to be trained, they do need to be controllable, and not in a position where, should we fail, should what we're doing here stop, they will be in a position where they can go and earn their living and earn their keep elsewhere.
You brought up a good point. Is, can these domestic elephants be released into the wild?
If there were enough wild left, yes. They certainly, I think they could. There's a great project being run by Her Majesty the Queen in Thailand that is dehabilitating rather than rehabilitating. They are training the elephants to go back and live in the wild. But, and they, so far they have released, I think, 9 or 10 elephants that are living wild. But the areas of land required are huge. And that area of land just doesn't exist in Thailand at the moment. It doesn't exist at this stage anywhere in the Range State. And anywhere that there is a large area of land, there seems to be, there are wild elephants in it already. So whilst one or two of them, or 10 or 12, 10 or 20 of the lucky few may be released, of the 3,000 odd domestic elephants we have in Thailand, there's just, there's nowhere to put them. So the unhappy, to me, unhappy fact remains that they're always going to be domestic, and the trick is to try and find, make it pleasant for them to be domestic, and hold the population at a level state until someone comes up with an idea of what we're going to do with them.
So there are 3,000 domestic elephants in Thailand currently.
Yes, just over, apparently. They try and count them every year, but it fluctuates.
And how many wild elephants are there?
We're still quoting figures from 1996, which is the last time anything like a reasonable count was done. And in those days, it was about 2,000. As far as I know, and I'm not an expert on the wild, I'm not an expert on anything really, but I don't know much about the wild side. There's no reason to suspect that the figure would have changed too far. And those were all within national parks. The protection within the national parks hasn't changed. The population areas haven't changed. And I would say that number is probably pretty close to what it is now, but no one really knows.
Yeah. And then the 3,000 domestic elephants, what are the laws to keep an elephant?
Actually, very little law at all. The elephants come under the same laws at the moment as buffalo. So you can do whatever, anyone can own an elephant, and once you have it, under the law as it stands, I mean, obviously you'd be frowned upon if, well, you know, actually some people aren't, but if the law as it stands, once you have an elephant, it's yours, and you can do with it what you will. There isn't, as far as I know, an animal cruelty law, although they're working on one at the moment. There are no federal laws about how you must keep that elephant. There are laws, there are, what am I going to call it, how would you say it, I forget the American term, but laws for city governments can ban elephants from the streets of certain cities, and they can enforce laws that way, and that's currently what Bangkok's doing very successfully, which means a lot of elephants are now in Chiang Mai and other cities. But as far as the federal, the national law goes, there's nothing to say that you can't have an elephant on the street. What they can do is they can, if you are holding up traffic, they can arrest you for that. If they think the elephant is illegally obtained, if they think it may have been wild caught, that is a national law. You're not allowed to catch elephants from the wild anymore. So if you can't prove your elephant is domestic, then they can confiscate the elephant for that, and that's what they've been using just recently. Even if they're reasonably sure the elephant was born in domesticity, what they're doing is catching them and holding the elephant for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whilst DNA tests are done. And that is a great deterrent to people, to stop people going onto the streets. They can also stop you for pollution, which is why mahouts clean up after themselves when they're on the streets now. And all spread of disease is another law that they have used. But no specific national law to say you can't have your elephant on the streets.
So it's illegal, though, to catch an elephant from the wild for domestic use currently.
That is illegal. It's been illegal since the 1950s.
And then you said that if you can't prove, how do you prove it's domestic?
There's been a registration scheme in Thailand since time immemorial because people wanted, since the logging days, since before this became an issue, there was registration because elephants were valuable. A good logging elephant was a good piece of valuable property, so people wanted to register their elephants in those days. There's also, since I've been here, at least I'm not sure how long it's been going on, maybe 7, 8, 9, 10 years, there's a microchipping scheme as well. So if you have a microchip, if your elephant has a microchip, of course that's easy. Then you can say, well, I couldn't have got this microchip unless it was domestic bred. And also, if you have the paperwork for that elephant, which says where it was born and was signed off by the village head on the time that it was born, then again you can that serves as proof it's domestic. Of course, there's a loop. Then we're not, of course, but there is a loophole to that you don't have to register your elephant until it's 8 years old. So at that point, it could have been split from its mother by 5 years. So there is still a chance of getting a juvenile out of the forest and getting it registered as a domestic elephant, which is a loophole we campaign to close, and I'm sure it will be closed soon because that's a fairly simple one to close.
And what are you proposing, that they're registered right when they're born?
I mean, born ideally or within an elephant's. Even the worst operators, the people who are slipping far too early, aren't slipping the babies from their mothers at less than a year old. So I would say less than 1 year registration when the baby's still with the mother at whatever, 1 year old.
And
And in the old days, the 8 years old made a bit of sense because transportation was so bad, but nowadays that doesn't really count. There's nowhere in Thailand you can't get to a district office within 2 hours, I would say. So there's no excuse not to register your elephants almost on the day they're born.
And you had said that you can do a DNA test to prove that it's a domestic elephant, is that right?
You can. The DNA test, sorry, I should have, the DNA test basically is what is the excuse that they would, when the guys who make it their business, and there are some very good guys who've made it their business within the government to try and stop the elephants being on the streets, when they've arrested them, it's the DNA test. They will insist on a DNA test, which usually comes back inconclusive, but it means that they can hold that elephant for 2 or 3 weeks until those results come back. So it's more of a clever ruse than anything else. To do a proper DNA test, I suppose you'd have to know the claimed mother and the claimed father, and that can be done as well in Thailand. A lot of Mahouts, particularly the guys who are keeping it in the family, will know. Certainly we'll know who the mother is, but probably we'll know who the father is as well. So that could be done as well. But for the most part, it was basically an excuse to provide a deterrent for the. So you confiscated the elephant for 3 weeks, and so the guy wasn't making any money for 3 weeks, and therefore he didn't want to get caught again.
Okay. And then, how much does it cost to keep an elephant? It seems like quite an expensive proposition, really.
We reckon. On it's a we reckon on about $1,000, 30,000 baht, give or take, per elephant per month. We feed slightly better and pay slightly better than most places. We also add little things like insurance and everything else. But I would consider we do it properly, and to do it properly, it costs that. You can do it cheaper.
And then you
So it's a big. It's an expensive proposition, especially if you're a villager who's traditionally owned elephants forever. And in the old days, they used to be able to, if the elephant wasn't working, they used to be jungle, so they just let the elephant go. And they can't do that anymore, so they've got to keep their elephant.
So you can't let the elephant go. So what happens to elephants? You had said something about on the street you can earn 7,000 baht a night.
That's the figure I've heard. I tend to treat that with a pinch of salt, as then that may have been. Well, maybe one night, the guy who told me that one night 5 years ago earned 7,000 baht in a night, and then somehow it stuck in his memory as the good old days that when that happened the whole time. But it's still quite a bit of money. It's still more money than they would still earn more money than we could pay them in rent. But of course, if you're down there, then you're away from your family. You're living basically with your elephants underneath. I mean, when I found them down there, they've been underneath underpasses. They've been in all sorts of places. And there are costs associated with living down there with your elephant in, I mean, literally traffic fines. They literally so the police will arrest you and they will get you on holding up traffic. And traffic fines are an occupational hazard for street elephants. It seems like that might be a quote. I don't think I've ever said that before, but it's true. And also transportation of fodder and that sort of thing. So it's more expensive to bring enough food in just to keep the elephant ticking over. So there are expenses. No, it's not pure profit. There are expenses to it, but it's still a reasonably lucrative way of making a living, so much so that certain people who are not the people we end up dealing with, again, by definition, I think, will procure a baby elephant from somewhere and take it onto the streets as a business. And it's a good enough business to persuade people to do that. For the most part, not what I would call problematic. It's not guys who know anything about looking after elephants as well, which is the sad case.
Yeah. And so,
I mean,
what happens with the elephants when people can't make a living or when the costs get too high? Do people abandon the elephants if they can't release them into the wild or abuse them, or what happens?
it's a very good point. I would say they look to try and sell them. Try and sell them to either these people who think that they can make a living as a business, or try and sell them overseas, sell them to go and work elsewhere, even if it's an inappropriate age. For the most part, again, the guys that I know, they find a way. They borrow money. They borrow money, then default on the loan, and then the elephant goes. They borrow money off other elephant camps. That's a very good question, actually. I don't know the answer to that, the proper one.
Because I know with, like here, people will release pets they can't care for anymore. And then with tigers, like in the US, there's a ton of pet tigers, believe it or not. And when people can't care for them, they don't actually release them into the wild, but they will like abandon them at sanctuaries or things who then also don't have money to take care of the animals. So you get a lot of abuse issues here.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that they do. There's a market. For reasons that mystify me, actually, still, because I know how difficult it is to make a living from elephants. There is a very strong market for elephants still. The prices have increased since I was here. I mean, in the early days, before we come up with this idea of renting the elephants and bringing them hoots off the streets as well, and in fact, what taught us why you shouldn't buy elephants was buying elephants. The price was 75. This is 2004, the last time we were buying elephants for the Four Seasons camp. The prices were 60 to 70% of what they are now. So the price is increasing. There's a very strong market for elephants.
And how much does an
But
elephant cost? An adult elephant? Or a baby maybe is more valuable.
Babies, your babies can go for anything. I mean, a cute baby can go for anything around $1 million. And a majestic tusker, which basically, which are the two elephants that are least rented, will be $1 million. A young breeding female, somewhere between 15 and 20, with a good nature, she could maybe make $1 million, but probably more like 700,000-800,000. And then as they get older and older, still 500,000 or 600,000 baht. I mean, the price of a car, basically. At least the price of a car.
So a cat.
And it's a strong market. It's a market that exists and thrives today, and I'm not entirely sure why. Because there's not enough work. Everybody's saying tourism is down, everybody's saying there's not enough work for elephants to do. So I don't know why people would want to own elephants unless you were either doing some, oh, we don't want to own elephants, we want to make sure the mahouts can keep their ownership. But unless you're running a successful business, which there are a few people doing now, ourselves included, or unless you're someone whose cultural identity is to own an elephant, I don't know why you'd be, and that wouldn't bring the price up. I don't know why the price is increasing at all.
Interesting. What, how much, just by comparison, how much does a cow go for?
Honestly have no idea. I wouldn't have thought more than 10-15,000 bucks.
Okay.
I mean, 10%, if that.
so the market for elephants is quite a bit higher than for other
Yeah.
types of animals.
I'm far more specialist, though.
Right.
It's a far more specialist market, and there are far fewer of them as well, I would guess.
So to become a mahout, you are born into it. Do people go into the business as well?
There are a few people. I mean, the guys we work with in Surin, they tend to be born into it. It tends to be a family affair. But there are other places where people will get into it, and that produces some good mahouts, some bad mahouts. There are quite a lot of camps. I mean, it won't maybe one reason why a lot of people are running on margins, but there are still quite a lot of camps who don't employ anyone, don't employ people who know what they're doing to be mahouts. They just employ kids, and it's like a summer job. Because basically, although it's dangerous to do so, and eventually people end up getting hurt, elephants end up getting hurt as well. It could be possible to control an elephant without much knowledge, just using sharp, pointy things. And obviously, that's not what what a traditional and trained mahout would do. But it does make it possible for unscrupulous people just to hire kids.
I know in some countries, you know, sort of the street boys, the orphan boys are an issue. Is this something that street kids can go into or tend to go into, or no, not really, because it's too specialized?
So I suspect that the baby elephants that you find, especially the small baby elephants that you find on the streets, I suspect that some of them are looked after by kids who are likewise on the street. But basically, anyone for people who are running it purely as a business, and it's not either cultural for them, or they don't have a conservation aim to the work that they do. Actually, it's probably being unfair to several very good business people who also look after their elephants very well. But the people who are out in it for pure profit, they tend not to really worry much about who looks after their elephants. The unscrupulous ones, not and by no means is everyone unscrupulous.
I wanted to get back more to your work at the foundation and hotel and how you got into it, how it got started in the first place.
I was in Nepal before this, working in Chitwan National Park, Royal Chitwan National Park as it was in those days, working at a place called Tiger Tops, and we had domestic elephants there. Anantara, who employ me, but also Four Seasons, but Anantara had bought a plot of land up here, had decided that they wanted to run an elephant camp, but they wanted to do something different with it. It didn't just want to be a trekking camp, it had to be something also, first of all, that looked after the elephants properly as a given, but also was offering something different from their point of view to the guests, but also to the mahouts and to the elephants. And they were wandering around checking out other elephant camps in Asia, and they stumbled across the one that we were running in Tiger Tops, and we got talking, and I proposed some ideas, none of which came to anything, but they offered me the job, and that's how I got here. And then basically, when I turned up, they had a deal with the government to rent four elephants off them, and that's what I was given, four government elephants. And it just grew from there, and we worked with them for a while. They had some great ideas. They had the traditional knowledge, which of course I didn't have any Thai traditional knowledge at all, didn't speak the language. I had some ideas of things that I'd like to see, and we came to compromises along the way, and the model has just grown organically from that, from four elephants to what, 32 that we have now.
How many do you have now?
32.
32. Wow. And
17 of
when did it start? When did you start?
2006. Sorry, 2003. I beg your pardon.
2003.
October 2003. Yeah. 2006 is when we started the foundation and when we started bringing babies up. So of those 34, 17 are under the foundation, and then the rest are under the hotels.
And is there a difference between the ones under the foundation versus ones under the hotel?
Yeah, we have a clear, at least. We're all in the same little valleys and everything else, but we have a clear separation of funding structures. Whereas the elephants that turn up for work and look after guests, and the hotel guests pay to be part of that activity, all their costs are met by the hotel. So it's an operating hotel department, a business, if you like. The elephants that don't work for the hotel, mainly the babies, but a few pregnant elephants that we rescue, or elephants eventually who are too old or whatever, they are looked after under the foundation, and the foundation is a registered foundation in Thailand. It's all legally done, but those elephants do not make a profit for the hotel. They don't make any money at all for the hotel, and profits from the working camps from the hotel elephants can go to the foundation, but not vice versa.
Okay. And so
And a clear
is there profit from the hotel to
separation.
help fund the foundation?
Yeah. But there's a clear separation between the business side of what we do and then the foundation side of what we do,
And the
which
foundation.
I think is important. I mean, both of them are hopefully good for the elephants that are involved, but I don't see why donations should go to help elephants that are also earning money for a commercial organization. The commercial organization should pay for those elephants, and then should any extra money should go and help other elephants rather than vice versa.
Right. No, that makes sense. And how do you determine when an elephant needs rescuing or comes into either the foundation or the hotel?
When we have, at this stage, it's land is the problem, where we are overstocked, basically. We have too many elephants on too small a bit of land that we destroy too much. But when we're in a position to rescue, we just put the word out. Nowadays, we just put the word out on the streets, and if someone's on the streets and they want to come up, and we have a waiting list, as it happens, then they will come. Basically, if an elephant and its mahout are on the streets, if they're struggling, if they're living in a place that's not suitable for them, then we will consider them as in need of rescue.
So right now you
unfortunately have to put the brakes on that for a while.
So right now you have a waiting list, you said?
Yes, of baby elephant mahouts, or mahouts with baby elephants who want to come up and be part of our program. But unfortunately, we don't have enough land. When I first got here, I said the carrying capacity was 10, and we're now going on 32 for a year or so now. And so we're just, when you let elephants run around, even to the degree that we do, they do tend to destroy just about everything they can.
Okay. So how much land does a domestic elephant need?
It depends what regime you're going to keep it under, I guess. And what's growing there, what sort of livestock. We've got 34 on about 200 acres.
And that's really not enough. You said you were overstocked.
I would say so, yes. It was never a primary forest. It was always scrub land anyway. But so the scrub gets cleared out pretty quickly. There are times when I think we have enough land, but at the moment we're just at the end of a very long dry season. And so it's a bit of a, I'm not going to say desertification, it's still green down there, but it's nowhere near as green and lush as it was before we arrived.
And are there plans to buy more land, or is there even more land to buy?
So far we've had no luck. We've been working on that with various government departments and trying to find ways to convince them that we can use the land. Most of the land around here is restricted for various pre-prescribed uses, either for economic or for poor farmers, or for development, and then some of it for conservation. And what we're trying to do is persuade them that what we do is conservation. But it's a tricky argument to make, given that once elephants come onto a piece of land, they will, at least for the first few years, I'm not going to say destroy it, but they will eat everything in sight. So that's that. And then trying to find more land to buy around the place. There are various plots we're looking at throughout Thailand that we may be able to buy if we can get the money together.
Are the elephants mostly eating on the land that they're at, or do you bring food in, or do you grow food as well for them?
This time of year, 100% bring food in. During the wet season, then sometimes at night, we don't have to, but this time of year in the dry season, during the day, we feed bananas and sugar cane as staple. During the night, we feed them pineapple trees. We also, the mahouts every evening will go out to the roadsides and everything else and cut the riverbanks and cut grass for them. There is some natural graze still left, but not a great deal. But the rest of it's all bought in.
What are an elephant's favorite foods?
Elephant's favorite foods, anything sweet, really. They
oh,
seem
really?
To like it would be a treat in the wild. Yeah, and we feed them as staple. Well, they're only, 40% efficient, so they need anything that can get them energy in easily. They love peanuts, which is, I guess, every school kid knows that, but it's true. sunflower seeds, they also seeds, high energy food. They need high energy, easily accessible energy food.
So I didn't realize
they don't digest. They only have one stomach, so they can't break down cellulose. So if they're eating green stuff, most of what they eat, 60% of it just comes out the other side having been mashed.
Oh, really? So they really need to eat a lot more than they use.
Yeah, exactly. Well, a wild elephant will need to eat 28 hours out of 24. It's why they don't sleep very much. It's just barely to survive.
Because when you had said that on the street people will feed them sugarcane and bananas, I was surprised. I hadn't heard that before. That's interesting.
Okay. And well, cucumbers down there. Anything really that they can strip and sell back at a profit.
And with a banana, do you peel it first?
For some of the younger babies, yes. For the adults, no. Some of our adults will actually peel it themselves now. They can use the end of their trunks just to peel it themselves.
So an elephant.
That's getting spoiled.
An elephant will peel the banana, him or herself.
Some of them will sometimes, but that's because our elephants are not very hungry. they're well fed. They lead a luxury life, so they're a little bit spoiled. Let's put it that way. It's not something I've seen before. You see very often, but one or two of ours have taken to doing that. Yes, and it's incredible to watch because they only have an opposable. I'm doing an impression for you again, but they only have basically an opposable thumb. And to be able to peel a banana just with the end of their trunk is something that I couldn't do with just the thumb and all my fingers together.
And do you have any YouTube videos of them peeling bananas? Because I saw that on YouTube there's quite a number of videos of the baths.
Yes, I get carried away with video in the bath, don't I? there is a video up there, I think there's a video up there somewhere with the peeling the bananas. I think if you look on the favourites, I think one of our guests managed to get, because it happened fairly quickly, one of our guests managed to get it. If you look on the favourites, there may be one in there.
Okay. And I wanted to know what, if people are interested in helping these elephants, you know, what can people do to learn more about the issue and also to help?
The website, www.helpingelephants.org, is a little bit out of date, but it still basically tells us what we're about and the elephant details. We've got more elephants than we have. I'm going to have to update it someday. Come out and see us. It's always good. We're here. We're not an uncomfortable place to stay. And there are various other camps also and places giving other information as well. So by no means are we the only place that you can come and get the sort of information. I happen to think we've hit on a way that is beneficial to all, and I like our method. But there are other camps doing similar things. Most of them tend to buy elephants, which unfortunately to me is one of the reasons possibly that the price of elephants is high, because a mahout with money in his pocket just having had his elephant bought just goes and buys another elephant. So I like the way we do things, but there are other camps doing similar things. But also talk to your travel agents and everybody else, and I would say if you're not going to, I suppose, necessarily answer the question you asked, but I'm just trying to find a way of saying how can you help without saying just come here. Visit any of the camps in Thailand. I would say whilst you're here, have a look around. The one guide, well, a very good rule of thumb when deciding which camp to visit, though, is to look and see how much they're charging you to visit. If they're charging you not very much to come, then that elephant is going to have to work very hard to make a living. And if they're charging you quite a bit, as far as I know, as a rule of thumb, that does mean the more expensive camps tend to be the ones that have the luxury to look after their elephants better.
And are you the only one, the only camp, or the only camp you're aware of that basically takes the elephants off the streets as opposed to buying the elephants?
At the moment, yes, I think we are the only one that has that as a policy. There are now a couple of places that have, I'm not going to say seen the light, but I've been banging on about it long enough. But there are now a couple of places that have started the idea of renting the elephants. The problem with renting the elephants from a donation point of view, and we do solicit donations from guests, and we do have elephant adoption schemes, and one elephant where a guest can be parents of a particular elephant. But it's much more difficult to persuade guests to do that if they realize, and you have to honestly, to be honest and tell them, if they realize that elephant may at some point go back to the streets. And so it's a lot easier to raise donations and adoptions if you buy that elephant, and that elephant is definitely 100% safe forever. Which, of course, if you rent, we cannot guarantee. We do our best, and so far, we've had one elephant leave, but not back to the streets. She went back to another place in Surin.
Okay, I was just about to ask, how much is the turnover? Or once someone's up there, they generally have stayed?
From the foundation side, once they're up here, they've generally stayed. A few of the adults who are under the hotels have gone to find other work in various places. But from the foundation, from the rescue side, there's one who's went back to to another camp, another rescue centre in Turin. So we've had a good rate of keeping people.
Does the domestic elephant, in our discussion, it seems that they're really quite separate from the wild elephant conservation. Is that right, or is there a way that the domestic industry helps keep wild herds wild?
Unfortunately, I would say it's the other way around. When there is a strong market for domestic elephants, when people are buying elephants, it's nothing I have against buying elephants, then one of the ways that people can get extra elephants to feed that market is to catch them from the wild in Burma, where it's still going on and still legally sanctioned, and then smuggle them illegally into Thailand, get them registered one way or the other, and then bring them onto that market. So when there is a strong market for acquiring elephants, for buying elephants, when there's a profit, when there are people out there buying elephants, when there's a profit to be made by selling elephants, then we can adversely affect the wild population.
Well, I really appreciate your taking the time to talk with me today.
No problem at all.
I hope you enjoyed those insights into domestic Asian elephants in Thailand with John Roberts, director of the Golden Triangle Asian Elephant Foundation, and also director of elephants for the elephant camps at Anantara and Four Seasons Tented Camp. Now, let me play you today's creature call once again and see if you've guessed it correctly. This week's creature call is from an endangered mammal that is the largest living land animal in Asia. It's also been the subject of this week's show. That's right, it's the sound of an Asian elephant. For next week's creature call, we'll stay in Asia but move to Indonesia and the reptile family. This animal is the largest living species of lizard and can grow to a length of up to 10 feet. Here's your preview. Be sure to tune in next week when I'll replay this strange sound from the wild world and reveal the animal that made it. Next week, I'll also talk with Brian Christie, author of The Lizard King and also the January 2010 article in National Geographic on Asia's wildlife trade. We'll talk about the illicit reptile trade and also his adventures in researching this underworld.
Archived episodes of The Wildlife are available on iTunes, at my website, laurelnemi.com, and at laurelnemi.podbean.com. You can stream The Wildlife live at theradiator.org every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, if you have comments about this show or ideas for future ones, you can email me at laurel@laurelnemi.com.
This has been The Wildlife. I'm your host, Laurel Nemi, and you're listening to The Radiator, 105.9 FM, WOMM LP, in Burlington, Vermont.